Okay, right on schedule, like clockwork, Ezekiel J. Kralin called from San Francisco, and I've got him on the line, I think. Zeke, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I've got things lined up, everything's all ready, and you've got your story ready to read?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, here we go. This piece is called Down and Out in San Francisco. I sometimes need to poop in the trash bag if someone else is hogging up the restroom down the hallway. I am not anal retentive, which behavior leads to constipation and all other sorts of hideous bowel syndromes. So I squat over the small trash bin beneath my sink after scooting it out to the room center, which is lined in a heavy-duty garbage liner for the sake of my own dignity. Usually when I need to dump for number two and someone else is in there, he just gotten there and will probably crap in the toilet, followed by a robust shower of 10 or more minutes. I sought over all sorts of Mother Earth magazine types of solutions, such as a Mobank toilet or those eco-friendly portable potties used in campers or tents for visiting national and state parks on the cheap. But none of them promise a dignified existence in an urban SRO. Then it finally occurred to me to just dump my load in a lined wastebasket, tie it up pronto, and toss it into the garbage disposal chute in the back porch. The stink doesn't even have a chance to permeate. Yet when I first tried that, the manager, Serge, second manager since Marcus E., the one in between, Rose, was a real New Age pyramid scheme doozy who suddenly died of virulent cancer after participating in anti-Zeke schemes, along with certain residents who had nothing better to do with their lives than torment this faggot-weary, old but gentle soul, posted a note up in the lobby a few days later stating, "Human feces was discovered 2 days ago in one of the trash bins. Please be careful not to let anyone through the front gate unless he or she has come to visit you." Naturally, I quickly figured the real situation, unbeknownst to manager and residents alike, who presumed it was a homeless person who sneaked in, or a friend of an illegal Mexican immigrant that worked in the teensy taqueria that shared a back door with our building's basement. The cheap dollar store trash liners were not sufficient to prevent the bursting of a bag under the weight of additional tenants' trash disposal. Thus, my discarded sack had popped open, squishing my own excrement through the broken seams. Lesson learned. Since then, I now purchase the hefty-type trash liners you get at Walgreens, fuck the dollar stores, to avoid such an embarrassment ever again. But also take the offending bag outside with me at the first opportunity and deposit it in an outdoor receptacle. Fortunately, there's one situated right outside the gate and almost in front of the Wells Fargo trio of ATMs, just beside my building. I'm 63 now, and I know full well the hazards of holding back a good dump, hemorrhoids being the least of the bad stuff that curses you unto death if you become a slave to puritanical modesty. I had obsessed for more than 2 years over how I could relieve myself in such a situation. But even worse, what if everyone came down with the stomach flu at the same time and the WC would never be accessible at the critical moment, 9 times out of 10? Most who live here rent a studio or 1 or 2 bedroom, thus enjoy their own personal toilet and stove, oven, fridge. But 3 or 4 residents on each of the 3 levels, ground 1 is for the shops, such as yours truly, occupy a single room. No kitchen, no bathroom, communal restroom down the hallway. This was not a fecal hazard back when all 3 restrooms were accessible to anyone living in an SRO on any floor. A dozen or so steps upward to reach an unoccupied latrine did not threaten to force one's personal Play-Doh extruder into pants stinking overtime. But when the next manager, Marcus E., took over, his Los Angelino high-crime paranoia overwhelmed this apartment building I call Hotel California North. Not only did he change the overhead hallway light bulbs from 20 watts to 100, thus transforming the ghostly dull corridors into hospital-type passages of uber-sane sterility. But he imposed cheap door closes to all apartment and room doors, as well as the bathroom and back porch doorways, which at unexpected moments would pop a spring with such force that had they hit one's eye, you'd go blind, or at least have a bloody face. He also installed an uber-bright light in the backway passage that exits onto 16th Street and lit up whenever a motion was detected. As if that area needed any protection from scurrilous night dwellers. But it does not. It's just a back passage with a locked gate. But most horrendous of all, he created a separate lock for each of the three shared commodes. So now, if one has to go really bad, he or she cannot simply skip up or down one or two flights to access another relief station that was unoccupied at the moment. One must therefore concede to likely intestinal cramps awaiting one's turn or find a viable solution, as I have. Would have been much more considerate for Marcus to provide SRO residents with one key for all three bathrooms. This would not only resolve his overhyped fears of the homeless sneaking in and skanking up the shared bathrooms, for which I am frequently scapegoated only because I am seen in public talking with a street vagrant from time to time, as if I had offered him carte blanche to our hallway toilets in exchange for a decent BJ, if only things were that simple. So once every other month or so, I find myself resorting to a healthy morning poop in my wastebasket, which plastic lining I twist up and tie ASAP after administering a quick wipe of water-dampened toilet paper followed by a dry version, while cussing the other two residents that share the commode as my poop explodes into a satisfying relief of pent-up angst from a severe lack of privacy. Other difficulties that are born of poverty and living in an SRO are as follows. Cooking. How does one purchase raw groceries and convert them into a satisfying meal because eating out is just too cost prohibitive? Well, with some excess cash, I was able to obtain a magnetic induction hot plate that cooks almost a third faster than a regular coiled stove and is a lot safer, as you could place a paper towel between fry pan and hot plate and nothing would burn or even singe. I also owned an infrared jumbo-sized Black & Decker toaster oven that not only made great toast, but allowed me to whip up cakes, casseroles, sautéed veggies, and many other dishes that one would expect mandates a real kitchen. Sadly, the on-off chip short-circuited about 3 years after purchase, which forced me to discard an otherwise perfectly good piece of technology, which planned obsolescence tossed me into a dark hell of makeshift cuisine. For that remarkable toaster oven was no longer available on Amazon.com, cause discontinued. Nor could I afford at the time to purchase the item once more, even if it were still on the cyber shelves. Since I live on a government stipend, I must confine my sundry shopping to secondhand or free box finds, else I'd perish. That includes stumbling upon a complete hot meal left atop a trash bin by some generous resident, as well as clothing, books, decorative bric-a-brac, and so forth. Everything except underpants and socks, which I purchase at bargain stores that proliferate in the Mission and Chinatown. There is also the matter of my teeth, of which but two-thirds remain and in rotting condition. Medi-Cal's dental services for male adults were eliminated more than 10 years ago. Obamacare has not stepped up to rectify this, but has left it up to each state via Medicaid. But even the blue states, such as my own California, have done little to provide free dental care for the poor, except to remove an aching tooth or resulting infection by a visit to the emergency clinic. I am most fortunate to have no serious infection or debilitation from my dental neglect, but to find alternative ways to eat healthy in spite of deteriorating ability to tear, crush, and macerate my meals so they'll provide maximal nutrition before being expelled via the intestines. For one, I use a freebie coffee grinder to pulverize walnuts, almonds, sesame, and sunflower seeds into a dust that I can mix into my oatmeal, salads, casseroles, yogurt. For two, I overcook my veggies beyond al dente to make up for my lack of chewing mastery, that I may nonetheless provide my stomach with maximal absorption of the nutrients thus imparted. As you must realize by now, one's dental deterioration eliminates many enjoyable dishes that most denizens of San Francisco take for granted, since most of them are deliriously affluent and do not believe their own pleasures in life have anything to do with requiring a significant percentage of the downtrodden in order to maintain their high level of superiority. Such is the nature of DOS capitalism, which at first presents itself as an innocent babe, then ravages the nest of compassionate liberal parents who wind up being hornswoggled into complacent doddering, while their very essence of life exuberance becomes a struggle to survive, even if on the most basic level of primitive fag bashing and female raping. There is the issue of trying to eat healthy while one's teeth deteriorate at an alarming rate. Since I do maintain a roof over my head, thank goddess, I keep certain equipment handy to facilitate the proper digestion of what food I can afford, such as a coffee grinder employed to pulverize nuts and seeds. What vittles I consume that require serious chewing, I take extra time to thoroughly grind the comestibles and wash it down with diet soda, milk, or other beverage. Though, most remarkably, I rarely suffer any toothaches or gum infections, which I attribute to my blessed destiny that gives me a certain amount of leeway to abuse my health so long as I keep it within a sane limit. For one, I don't mess with hard drugs, only occasional alcohol and marijuana. Tobacco, too, I had stopped smoking for 32 years, but resumed almost 3 years ago, probably has to do with imprinting my psyche onto Larkin's. I have since quit smoking again. I utilize other equipment to aid my crumbling pearls, such as an osterizer, high quality, found in a free box, and a juicer, low-end but works great, just $10 at Goodwill, and a ceramic knife, purchased in Walgreens, as seen on TV, section, for half price. I have been a vegetarian for years now, ever since I left my family way back in 1968. Though I aspire to become a vegan, I've since learned that such a lofty goal, to not enslave or murder innocent creatures for one's own survival, demands a hefty sum of buckazoids beyond my present capabilities, living as I do on a humble government stipend in one of the most expensive cities on the planet. True veganism requires special equipment for dehydrating fruit and vegetables, expensive processes, and a real kitchen to execute the necessary preparation. This also requires tons of free time that most folks just don't have. I have the time, but not the money. Talk about your catch-22. My diet of late consists of oatmeal or granola soaked in soy milk for at least 10 minutes for breakfast, or down the street for a whole wheat sesame bagel with cream cheese and a small coffee, more java or iced tea, and usually an almond croissant or other pastry at Bean There Coffee House on Waller Street. And for dinner, sautéed veggies on a bed of brown rice and small cubes of firm tofu, topped off with grated sharp cheddar cheese and a splash or two of soy sauce. For beverages, I drink cheap Safeway diet soda on sale for 99 cents per 2-liter bottle, silken soy milk unsweetened, and a variety of 5 or 6 types of tea I keep stashed in the pantry. Sometimes a delicious meal, snack, or sandwich is left for me in a trash bin. Oh, on a trash bin, newsstand, doorstep, a free box. Amazing what gourmet treats I discover on my lonesome hikes across the Seven Hills, often vegetarian or even vegan. Quality that's certainly beyond the reach of my own thin wallet. May Queen Boudicca abundantly gift these kind denizens who think of the poor and homeless among us. Speaking of free box, that is where I acquire most of my wardrobe, including footwear, but I only pick freshly laundered clothing in order to avoid bed bugs and other noceums. Books, magazines, dishes and cups, cookware, utensils, toys, board games, charming bric-a-brac, paper, art supplies, and storage boxes number among the free box pickings one can stumble upon anywhere in our fair city. Without such generosity from the well-to-do, my simple life would be filled with so much more hardship than it is already, for I am but one baby step away from the gutters. Companionship is rare, since all my friends from the past have long since moved on to more affordable climes. I take whatever camaraderie and brotherly intimacy I can get, and that's way too infrequent for this poor faggot's happiness. The street crowd, mostly homeless, seems to be my only source of this fundamental need for friendship and love. There are some truly sweet men out there, but I can only have their bodacious company for a night or two before they must skip along once more on their vagrant way. But they remain secure in my heart with loving memories I wouldn't trade for a megazillion smackaroonies. Salubrious reader, do not lose heart over my unhappy situation. For there is one man, one glorious dragon of a man, who has been my savior, my teacher, my guardian, and my BFF of all time for these past 8 otherwise lonesome years. And you already know his name if you've been following my blog for just a mere week or read my novel, Free Me From This Bond, even if only the first 10 pages. He is, of course, Larkin Kelsey. And we, too, are about to embark upon the next chapter of a great spiritual odyssey that shall never end. It will commence my birthday, July 1st, as far as I can tell. Pissing in the sink is another aspect of living in an SRO. Who in his right mind wants to walk down a brightly lit corridor late at night just to relieve the bladder? I did use a plastic quart container for a couple of years, but the possible embarrassment of being seen walking down the hallways with a urine-filled container was more than I could handle. In fact, tardigradian reader, I was cornered by next-door neighbor Barry 4 years ago with urine bottle in hand. It was transparent, thus the liquid's amber color shone like a lantern. He held a scissors in his hand, asked me to clip off a gnarly thick hair that protruded from a perfectly square scar by his left shoulder blade. Sign of the gay warrior. I set my plastic receptacle on the hallway floor, complimented him on the noble scar, and clipped the unwelcome intruder. Then Barry chuckled when he spotted my bottle, and I whisked myself off to unload it in the communal bathroom, embarrassed as hell. As a light sleeper, such an interruption would curse me with insomnia for the remainder of my nocturnal respite. So I piss in the sink, which affords me unbroken darkness and just a few steps required before urinating and hopping back into my nest. Guests, some of them quite handsome, pose another problem entirely, which is that it's much better they pee in the sink than expose themselves to jealous queens or nasty pricks or cunts they are more likely to encounter in their hallway romp to the bathroom. FYI, I wash my dishes in a plastic tub so that urine does not permeate my digestive system. But of course, this presents the matter of bowel expulsion, which, as we all know, is a regular function of daily human existence. So there is no way to totally hide my visitors from neighbors, but usually this does not interfere with my overnight debauchery, if such it comes to, so long as my usually heavy-hung guest, though not always, if he can give really good head, does not impart a lascivious greeting or any other sort of howdy, just say nothing and go to the restroom without occupying it for more than 10 minutes. But these are gregarious and fun-loving men upon whom I would not dream of imposing upon more than a bit of my instructions on how to spend a night with Zeke and get away with it in one piece. By the way, vestibular reader, I'm presently typing this account via my brand new Android tablet's Swipe, S-W-Y-P-E, keyboard. Certainly a fantastic boon to those of us who suffer carpal tunnel and other forms of repetitive stress injury from decades of finger clacking. But it doesn't always get what letters you specifically chose. For example, every time I swipe the word app, it gives me asp, shades of Cleopatra's ghost. But there are also other, more common words that somehow elude this newfangled swipe feature. Try typing cock, and you'll get chalk, or vagina, and you'll get basins, which confuses me as to whether this glitch arises from prudishness or a Freudian slip by its programmers. Don't believe for a microsecond, however, that Swipe's shortcomings are confined to high-tech slang that may or may not one day find their presence in the American Heritage Dictionary, or to words viewed as unsavory to the ignorant horse hockey masses. Another example, when I swipe begun, I get instead begin. Rather than bore you with further evidence, just be warned that the swipe gremlins are working overtime. I must admit, though, that swipe is already intelligent enough to bring succor to millions of hardworking folks from this debilitating malady of RSI. So much so that I've begun to use my tablet with a 10.1-inch screen for ample finger room at home, instead of the conventional keyboard that's rested upon my desk for nigh unto 30 years, ever since I purchased my first computer, a compact luggable. Ha! Try swiping luggable and you'll get pluggable. So, my sweetest readers of all time, permit me to end this elucidation of living on the down and out here in San Francisco as my friend of many years, but who had to return to his home city of Philadelphia more than a decade ago that he tend loving care to his mother dying from Alzheimer's, Sean describes it. Though I leave out a majority of descriptions about the oppression and downright evil that is dumped upon the poor and homeless by our wealthy, who now compose the larger part of this holotropic burg, which I cynically call the City of St. Francis. Another joke, swipe holotropic and you'll get halitosis. In spite of what good people remain in this town, or who moved here recently, it's simply a matter of too few and far between. But I have Larkin, thus my own world, it's perfect. That's the end.
I'm here. I'm back. Okay. I was not anywhere else. I was here the whole time.
Sometimes you go have a snack, right?
Is swipe is it an actual physical thing, or is it a piece of software that lets you type on the screen by moving your
software,
fingers?
Software, yeah. And then I stopped using the tablet for about a year and a half, and then when I got another one, finally, higher grade of Android and all that. Swipe wasn't there anymore. It just disappeared. It just discontinued. I don't know why.
Well, look around for a Swipe clone. Look around for something that probably 1,000 other people or 10,000 other people who liked it, and they probably...
I searched all over for discussion groups and tips.
Well, you don't have to get exactly the same thing. You can ask for a Swipe clone. You can ask for anybody making anything.
I looked.
Oh, okay.
I'm really good at doing research.
And you said something about the seven hills of San Francisco?
Yeah.
Are there seven hills in San Francisco? I don't remember.
It's some people call it the City of Seven Hills.
They do?
Yeah.
Well, there are seven cities of Sibylla and the seven hills in Rome. I didn't know there were seven hills in San Francisco too. And you said something about a ceramic knife. Is a ceramic knife a ceramic coated metal knife, or is it
No, it's pure ceramic. It's Japanese style. I forgot what they call it. Ginza knife, maybe?
Can it be sharpened when it goes dull?
No, it always stays sharp. The thing is, you don't put it in the washing machine. It is brittle. You don't want to break it that way.
Oh.
But it's amazingly sharp. Cuts very, very thin.
And that sounds interesting. A knife that you never have to sharpen.
Yeah.
Is it good for vegetables? Does it cut vegetables without smashing them?
Yes, beautiful.
Oh, I will look into that. Are they expensive?
Well, no. Well, they were at the, as seen on TV, which I rarely pay attention to.
Oh, as seen on TV, yeah.
In Walgreens. They had
the high-quality ones.
As seen on TV section in Walgreens.
Mm-hmm. Walgreens.
And they were, $20, but then one day I see them on sale for $10, so I got to get it.
Okay, that sounds good. My knives come from the thrift store, so I have
I don't think that ceramic knives will last long enough to wind up in a thrift store.
I saw a video of a man who was some famous cook who really pays attention to. He's got these, $1,000 knives, and he just to figure it out if he could do it, what it would be like. He went to a thrift store and he found a knife that would have been a nice knife if it hadn't been, left out in the rain or sitting in the dishwater for whatever, and it was totally corroded and horrible.
Uh-huh.
And he took it home and fixed it up. And it made it beautiful again, and it worked fine. And another man did something very like that with a dollar knife from the dollar store. He wanted to find out if you treated it like an expensive knife and sharpened it properly, how long would it last? It doesn't stay sharp as long as a real knife,
but
he managed to cut through, do the paper cut and the cut the edge of the tomato and swipe it in the air and cut something with it.
Let me up this boring knife talk to something interesting about knives that happened. It didn't happen to me. Something I saw.
No.
About 6 or so years ago, coming home one day, there's this big dirty old pickup truck, really dirty. You know, like some hobos lived in it, or some, you know, whatever. And it was knife sharpening. The guy does knife sharpening, and the guy was dirty and greasy looking and scary, and this old wheel line. It looked like something out of a Stephen King movie. Fucking weird. Right next to my building on the corner, right in, you know, modern day Castro.
The man's got to make a living.
Oh my God! Yeah. I guess he really does a human meat market on the side. And the knife thing is just
like in Delicatessen, the version of Delicatessen was made by the same person who did City of Lost Children, which you might find and enjoy. It's
it was a totally hideous apparition. I said, how does anyone not bother noticing this and getting annoyed by it? It's fucking weird.
Annoyed by it? Annoyed by what? That he had a business and he was sharpening knives for a living?
The dirt was so, the truck was so dirty. He was dirty. The whole thing was dirty and weird. He was some potential Charles Manson.
I see. Okay. Well, that's reading something into it that I'm not sure was there.
No, it's not reading anything to do. I'm describing exactly as it appeared. This is not my imagination.
All right. I got it. I wasn't doubting you.
That's what makes it so extraordinarily horrific.
Hmm. Okay.
You just don't have this.
Well, there used to be people who they drove around and sharpened scissors, you know. But nobody cares about their scissors anymore. They just get
another. But if he were dirty and grubby looking, and his vehicle was also dirty and grubby looking, that would be a different story, wouldn't it? You wouldn't want him to get near you.
This was just a low point in his life. He was feeling depressed, and he figured, why should I take a shower? I'm only got to sharpen knives all day. I'm not going to have to put my hair in curlers.
I have another knife story for you.
Okay, go ahead.
A scissor story, actually. Well, I had been balding pretty much for at least 10 years and I still get haircuts. I go down there and get the cheap ones. I don't, you know, don't get gay barbers. I'll be paying $30. I just go downtown and pay $8 or something, right? Mm. So I found one place, and it has, this is about, mid-90s. And this barbershop, someone told me it was cheap, because I know you like it. They had pictures of Ronald Reagan, you know, Republican stuff, American flag everywhere. So what the hell, you know, we won't talk. I'm not into that anyway, you know. I'm a geek and I'm a queer. And I don't talk barber talk, please. So I'm sitting down there, you know. I go there a few times. One day he says, well, the scissors is, you know, spinning around my head, and he's slicing. He says, you ain't one of those commies there, are you?
What did you say?
Yeah, he has the scissors right around my face.
What did you say?
I said, no, of course not. And that was the last time I ever got a haircut. That's from that day on, I've been shaving my head.
It puts you off your feed for, yeah. I got it.
Don't expect these things in a city that has a reputation for being progressive. This shit goes on all the time.
He was kidding. He wasn't really going to cut you.
Well, it was certainly a compromising situation.
Yeah, but there are all scenes from movies that I've seen where...
What if I had said, yes, I am a commie?
I don't know. Maybe he would have cut you.
Yeah, well, it's bad for business, you know. It's like
there was that guy who made people into pies, Sweeney Todd the barber. My God, he were better than the plague.
Well, he ain't the only one. It's even in nursery rhymes, isn't it?
It might be.
There is one. Neighbor Hart just stole some. Not bird, but no. I was thinking of birds in a pie. Never mind. But anyway, yeah. Of course, you know, there's cannibalism stories and all different types of times of society, you know.
Okay, on that note, I'm glad you called and read your story, and I have to go forward here, and I have to hang up on you. So is there anything lasting that you want to, a point that you'd like to make, or something you forgot to say?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm satiated.
Say hi to your friends for me, and
I will.
Cut up something with that knife and enjoy it.
Okay. Okay, we'll do.
See you later, Zeke. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
All right.